Welcome to It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us. This podcast takes you into the lives of people who have gone through loss and have come out the other side to experience joy again. Each story is someone's lived experience and reveals how wrestling with grief can turn loss into wisdom. You might even find some of these insights helpful in your own grief journey. Come, meet the people like yourself who have experienced loss and who now openly share their story with us. And now, here is your host, Rick Berg.
Well, welcome everybody to It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us. I'm Rick Berg, your host again, and it is wonderful to be together again. I think that all of us, you have either gone through this or perhaps will in the future. You've had somebody special die in your life, and you're wondering, when do I go back to work? And how will that be when I go back to work? The image I already always have is around the water cooler, thinking about meeting somebody there for the first time, you know, an employee, a co-worker, a boss, and wondering what will they say or not say, and how will I respond to that event going back to the workplace. I think it's a really important topic to talk about, grief in the workplace, and so I'm very happy that I found somebody who can talk about this from her own experience and who's now become an expert in this area. And so I'm really happy to invite Susan Jabor onto It's All About the Story. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. Okay, go. I'm so ready. Because I'm with you, right? That thought of going back and thinking, like, what do I say to the person who says something? What do I say to the person who doesn't say something? You have to decide in that split second how much of yourself to share, whether they really want to hear or they want you to keep walking. Like, it's so complicated. So yeah, let's dive in.
Yeah, this is such a good point. And of course, you know, I want to take you back to your own personal experience. And it's a sad story, obviously, of the death of your son, Ben. And I just want to share, because this is about personal storytelling kind of podcast. So I just find it interesting that often behind somebody's calling to go into grief work, there's usually some type of story that's connected. And so could you tell us a little bit about, you know, your experience with Ben and how it impacted your journey to become an educator in this particular specific field of grief?
Yes, thank you. And thank you so much for asking. And I'm so grateful that you're having a podcast that's all about grief stories, because it's the piece really that we're missing, is that we're not sharing our grief stories and then we're not learning from each other. And then we just all stay scared and confused and unsure what to do or say as the griever and as the support person. And I learned all of that, as you say, you know, we come to it out of our own experience. And mine was, you know, my most recent death was that of my son, Ben. He died in September of 2020. So not all that long ago. And, you know, for those of us who understand how the timeline really works, 3 years is not all that long. Yeah. And, you know, I'm very grateful in a weird kind of way, and grievers will understand this. I love being on a podcast that's, you know, really grievers are the ones who are listening, because they'll understand when I say things that to people who haven't had this experience sound kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And I preface that before I say, I'm kind of grateful that both my dad and my mom had died before Ben, because it meant that it wasn't the first significant loss in my life. Mm-hmm. So not that I'm glad on any version of reality that my dad died 25 years ago and my mom 10 years ago, Ben now 3 years ago, but it did give me a not big enough toolbox, but at least a little bit of a toolbox when Ben died. And at the same time, there's something about getting that middle of the night phone call. Like, I'm a parent who has lived that worst nightmare where you go to bed thinking everything is fine. You get a phone call in the middle of the night from the police, and then all of a sudden your world is a bomb blasted out post-apocalyptic nightmare, and you have to figure out what on earth to do next and how and with who and why and all the things, you know, everything that you expected, everything you thought was coming no longer exists. And so then what? And really for me, you know, it's a very long journey to get to looking at the workplace, but it really started with some curiosity about, you know, why people who I thought were my people didn't show up, which led me to understand that for many grievers, there's an understanding that grief changes your address book. And I sort of started to see that everywhere, every forum I was on, every griever I was talking to, everyone was saying, oh yeah, totally changes your address book. And I became so curious about why that was, because I knew that the people who hadn't shown up for me really wanted to, because I knew them well enough to know they must have, but they didn't. So why was that? What was holding us back? And that's where I really, you know, my curiosity has led me. And that's all, you know, if you're in the very earliest acute days of grief and months of grief, where you can barely figure out how to tie your shoes, my curiosity at that phase was about, like, how do I breathe? How do I get through a day? How do I do all these unspeakably impossible things? But then it became about, like, what happened to that person? Like, why did they disappear? And what could I offer that could help to change that? And really what I came to see was that, you know, as your griever listeners have experienced, there's a whole gap in our shared understanding, our shared confidence, our shared skill sets about what to do with grief. You know, whether we're experiencing it ourselves or trying to support someone who is, we don't know what to do. I didn't understand enough about how it really worked to be able to grieve myself. And so I had to become a student of grief to be able to survive. Like, as a matter of survival, I knew, like, I needed to understand this better. I needed to know better whether what I was experiencing was normal, right? Because there's so many symptoms. There's like 8 or 10 very normal symptoms that you should expect to experience. But we don't talk about them, and we don't talk about it that way, you know, with that kind of frankness and openness and expectation that, you know, you should have some sleep issues, you should have some intestinal issues, you might have some muscular issues, you're going to have some brain fog. That's the one for me that really was, honestly, you know, I really thought, you know, Ben has died, so that, like, my life is no longer what I expected it to be. I've lost myself, because I was very clear. The person who went to bed that night no longer exists. And somehow I have some version of instant onset brain disease because my brain doesn't function.
Yeah.
And I should have, you know, had my mom talked about it when my dad died, because now looking back, I can see 100%, you know, the conversations my brothers and I had about what on earth is wrong with mom. Nothing was wrong with her. She had brain fog because her life partner had died, and that should be expected, but we don't talk about it enough to know and then be able to say, oh, I'm seeing some brain fog, mom. Like, what could I do to help you with that? Can I send you, you know, can I call you with reminders when you're supposed to be somewhere? There's very practical things we can do, right? But we're not even talking about what's going to happen, never mind how we can support each other.
Well, that's really powerful, because, I mean, two things that you said that are really important for our listeners to reflect upon is, you know, that whole thing of historical antecedents, that is, what you've learned before, you know, has carried forward into the future. And because you had a couple of experiences before, like you say, I had some tools. Well, some people don't have any tools, especially if they haven't gone through that experience and actually thought about it or considered it,
or
wondered what to bring forward that might be helpful. And then your second point about brain fog is so good, because it leads right into this whole area of workplace, because here we are, you know, going back to work, and we're not the same. We're not the same as a person, but I mean, we're not clear in our thoughts. And so, you know, when you go back to work, and when you went back to work, I mean, what was that experience like for you? And, you know, what did it teach you about, like, workplace grief and how you were responded to, or what you were experiencing coming back after the death of your son?
Yeah, it taught me so much, you know, and part of what happened for me, which, you know, we look back now, my daughter and I, and we can see how much a blessing it was in many ways that all of this happened during the variety of levels of COVID lockdowns, right? And shutdowns and limited access to other people. And for us, that actually turned out to be a bit of a blessing in disguise. Mm-hmm. What it meant for me at work was I got assigned to work from home. So that was a huge gift because I didn't, and at our office, so I work in film and television, and there was super strict protocols about who could talk to who you could stand next to. You know, we all had colored lanyards and a yellow couldn't talk to a green, like the whole thing. And there was only a certain part of the office that I was allowed to go into when I was at the office, because I ended up being a bit hybrid and having to be there sometimes and not there other times. And what I discovered was that, as all grievers know, very quickly, people don't know what to say. So you get a lot of old cliches and platitudes, which I will do everything I can to eradicate because they're just all terrible. So don't say them anymore. Yeah. And really, it's, you know, one of the things that happened to me is I got a phone call from our showrunner. So in television, there's someone who kind of runs the writing room. He kind of runs the whole show. He's like your head writer, if you can kind of, and a whole bunch of other things, but he's one of the head writers. And he phoned and he said, you know, like, I don't even really know what to say. And I'd worked with him for years. I'd been on the same show for a long time and he had met Ben. And I said to him, you know, like, you write words for people to say for a living. If you don't know what to say, nobody knows what to say. And it's okay. Like, there's no perfect words. It's almost better to start with, I don't even know what to say. Because then we can have a conversation. Then there's an opening there. Whereas if you bring on those platitudes and cliches, it just like shuts the door for the griever. It just lands so poorly for almost all of us. I never say everybody, but for almost everybody. The other thing that I learned really was that there were huge gifts that we could give people who were grieving. So an example for me in my experience was that one of Ben's friends launched a GoFundMe because they wanted to raise money to donate to charity in his name.
Wow.
And they ended up raising tons of money. It was really amazing. And so in the old, you know, we're all in the office days, I would have put a little poster in our kitchen on the bulletin board saying, you know, like, we're having this fundraiser. If anyone wants to contribute, you know, here's the GoFundMe link. And so I approached one of our office head people and I said, like, can you just put this poster in the kitchen? Like, I'm not allowed to go to the kitchen, but I think you are. Or can you like pass it through the divider to someone who is? I don't even know how to tell people we're doing this. And she said, no, not to worry. I'll take care of it. Bless her heart. It's one of the biggest gifts I got from the workplace. She emailed every single person that was associated with our production. So all of the crew in Vancouver, all of the team in LA, every single person got an email about this fundraiser. And that was the biggest gift to me because it meant that everybody knew. Because the hardest part is the telling, right? Mm-hmm. Having to say those unspeakable words and speak that unfathomable reality over and over and over again. It was like a knife to the heart every time I had to say it.
Yeah.
So for her to have taken that on for me and told everybody meant that I knew I didn't have to say anything to anybody because everybody knew. And so that's one of the things that I talk to businesses about. You know, when this person is coming back after 3 to 5 days, because really the average leave, I think I saw a stat recently out of the US that it was 5.6 days. So we're getting better because the last one I saw was 3 to 5. So, you know, we're inching up. We really need a month. We need 20 days. And even that's not, we're not going to be over our grief, but we might be able to be coherent, but that's not what we get. You get 5-ish days. There needs to be a phone call before that person comes back. Because what I hear from grievers is they go back. And as you say, you don't even know if you should go to the water cooler because does everybody know? Does nobody know? Do I have to tell people? Are they all going to bombard me at the same time? Is nobody going to say it? Like there seems to be, you know, polar opposites seem to be the norm. Either everybody says something and then you're overwhelmed and you don't know what to do, or nobody says anything and then you're confused and isolated. And we need to find that happy medium and we can facilitate that conversation. Yes, it's going to be awkward. We're going to make mistakes. We're learning new skills. That's okay. But what if someone in leadership or their person's supervisor, direct supervisor, phoned them the night before to say, okay, you know, you're due back tomorrow. We're just checking in to see what we could do to ease that. Can we tell everyone for you?
Yeah.
Can we say to the team, you know what? They're going to come back for a half a day. They just want to like come and be in the space and see what's up next on their desk, but they don't really want to talk about it tomorrow. So could you approach gradually over the coming days and weeks, mm-hmm. right? Or do you want everyone to come and then it's all done? And then the telling and this, I'm sorry, and the awkward conversation is finished. And then you can carry on from there. But it has to be up to the griever, right? It has to be griever informed. They have to be in charge a little bit of what's happening. And we can ease that transition. We can ease that reintegration, but we have to get a little bit awkward. It's going to be a little bit awkward because as a collective, we're really awkward about grief because we're not talking about it. We're not learning about it.
Yeah. So when you return, so some good things happen, like you.
Yep.
What in your experience were some difficult moments, if you're willing to share that, that were kind of left you, you know,
yeah.
What did that happen, or what I could
confused.
Have confused, or because I, and yeah. again, this is not being putting down any person. It's this
no.
whole thing is about educating, and it's like you said earlier, people don't know what to say sometimes, and so if we don't educate them on perhaps what are some good things to say or not to say, well, how do yeah. we know if you don't have a history of it?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think most of us on some kind of instinctive level understand that all of those sayings
right.
don't land right. We say them because we don't have anything else. And then we kind of go, oh, like I didn't want to do that. And that really was a big problem. Like what people chose to say. And it really, I'm with you. We need to all just embrace that as a collective, we're really bad at this. And if we want to get better, we have to learn from each other. So we're going to have to just embrace that we're bad at it. We're not very good at it. We don't understand it enough. And then we can learn from there. Where I got to really was just having to hear what people were saying and listen for the intention. And honestly, I would just see their lips moving. And I would think in my head, this person is just saying that they care about us, that they're really sorry this happened, and that they really want to help us. And they're reaching out. Because what was coming out of their mouths, I mean, people said really hurtful things and they don't mean to, it's not their intention. So if I was going to put together a top 10, I mean, I won't even do top 10. Number one, the cliches and platitudes, throw them away. They just don't work. Any kind of cheering up, right? People want you to feel better. There is no feeling better. There is just feeling what we're feeling. And you don't actually have enough power to control that. I hate to break it to you. You don't, there's no, you can't make us feel better. And that's not a helpful paradigm to be operating in. So anything that's intended to kind of cheer the person up, or, you know, often in wanting to connect with someone, we want to share with them our grief story or what happened to us and say, oh, I totally get it because the same thing happened to me. Every grief is individual. Every grief that I've experienced for myself, they're all individual. Never mind that mine is different than yours. Each one for me is different. Mm-hmm. So anytime you want to kind of say, oh yeah, like that same thing happened to me. And people would say that and then go on to talk about like their pet. And I don't want to diminish pet loss because it's really important. And my son died. So there's not a comparison to be made here. It's not the same as your dad. It's not the same as anything. And even if you also lost a son, it's not the same as that either. So, you know, you could say, wow, I've experienced grief. And what I know for me is there was a lot of big emotions, or there was a lot of confusion, or there was a lot of, you know, indigestion, or whatever was a lot for you, share that. Because you can build connection through shared experience without, you know, where we want to go to is I know exactly what's happening, but you don't, because you can't. And when you say like, you know, I know just what's going on. I have the best idea for you, right? We want to fix it. We're so conditioned, especially in North America, but I think generally in Western culture, to fix, right? We want to be in action. We want to like analyze the problem, plan the steps, execute the steps, done and dusted, right? And grief does not operate at all like that. Yeah. So all those skills that we've all mastered and we're so great at, and I was an A+ student in all of that, useless when it comes to grief. We have to get into open-endedness, right? What you're going to say is going to be something open from your heart. Oh, I can only imagine. And I don't even know what I would do. And I don't know what to say to you because I don't know enough about what's happening for you. So would you like to share something that's real for you right now? I don't know. Come up with something that sounds like you. I might say something like that. A lot of people wouldn't say something like that. I'm so sorry. I don't mind. I'm so sorry. Other grievers I talk to, they say, oh, I hate when people say they're sorry. But when you speak it from the heart, I think you can say pretty much anything as long as it's genuine and it's honest and it's vulnerable and it's going to be messy, and that's okay. We're learning something new. It's going to be messy.
You think the workplace is a difficult place to be able to be exactly what you just said because
yep.
of how we're looked at or perceived, you know, are you weak or, you know, you shouldn't. you shouldn't kind of show your emotions in the workplace like that, because, well, you're a professional, you know, you should be,
you know,
and so maybe there's not a permission to be able to do that there so easily. Would that be correct in your experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do believe that that's changing, because I think workers, employees, team members are demanding that. And I actually just read a really great article yesterday on SHRM, on the HR, the US HR, I can't remember what it stands for, Society for HR Managers, something like that, that was talking about how leaders are falling behind this new demand and this new way that employees actually want leadership to behave. Because we want to understand that you're human. We want to be able to be human too. Mm-hmm. And the staff, the employees, the team will only be as honest and vulnerable as the leaders are being, because it's not safe to be more, right? So it really does need to come from leadership. And, you know, that's the ideal. The ideal is that leadership really is in transition, and it's been in transition now for decades, right? There's so many people that have done amazing research about the superpower that is vulnerability. It's not a weakness. It's actually, that's where your power is. That's where our creativity is. That's where everything we've, you know, employed people, unless you literally have employed them to be a cog in the machine, which is very rare. We've employed people to be creative and honest and human, all the things. And then somehow we still have that holdover. You know, I'm old enough that I remember the days where we were taught, you know, you like write all of the mess in your life off and you leave it out the door. You don't bring any of that to work.
Right. Yeah.
And that has shifted for sure in my work career, and I think is up for another big paradigm shift now, because, you know, the millennials, bless their hearts, I love them so much, they're just demanding it. They're like, no, I want to be seen, heard, and valued at work. And if I'm not that, I'm out. And so that's behooving, you know, us older folks who are in those leadership positions to really look at, with honesty, at how we're leading. Are we leading in that old model where it's like, yeah, we're here. We're, what professionalism looks like is that we're shut down emotionally. We only connect on the things we need to get done. That model is done. We want to be connected on a human level now. And we want to be able to be our whole selves at work. And so the leadership needs to step into figuring out how, for your business, because it's different for everyone, how do you create those safe spaces? And if you are not actively working on your own emotional intelligence, you need to get on that bandwagon. That bandwagon has been going for a long time now. And if you're on that wagon, this is our chance. This is when we get to use it. It's to have these kind of honest, little bit messy conversations. And what's interesting about it, you know, I hear from leadership all the time that they want less drama. They're worried that if they open up the space for this, you know, for any mention of emotion, it's going to be really full of drama and just be too messy and no one will ever get anything done. And in actuality, it's the opposite. Because if we can just name the emotion, that helps it move. Sure. And that helps us concentrate. And that helps us be creative. And the more that we feel like we can bring everything that is us, everything that is true for us on any given day, and still be respected and still be a valued part of the team and still be successful and still be productive, that's the magic sauce.
Yeah.
The denial takes a whole lot of our energy. If I had to go to work and never cry, I would have been useless to my employer. Mm-hmm. But I just chose because I had enough sweat equity there. I'd been there for a long time. People knew me. People knew my son, right? It was a, you know, had become kind of a family, as much as workplaces do have that flavor to them sometimes. And so I just grieved out loud at work. I cried at work. And I needed to, and my employer was okay with it. I didn't make a scene. I didn't fuss. Yeah. You know, there was no drama. But the reality is that if I had not had that permission, which frankly, I gave myself and then other people kind of came along with me, right? Nobody gave it to me. That's a whole separate conversation. We need to be giving that permission, but no one gave it to me. I just gave it to myself. And people allowed it, right? I didn't ever get shut down. And that meant that that overwhelm could come and it could flow through and I could cry for 30 seconds or 2 minutes or whatever it was. I could go for a walk around the block, come back, and then I'm back to creativity and productivity. That's what we want. But if I'd had to stand at my desk denying there was anything emotional going on for me, pretending everything was okay, I would have got nothing done, because that denial takes so much energy.
Yeah, the word that came to my mind when you were talking is that you were given a were given the space.
Yeah.
Without judgment. And maybe you took a little bit of that, you know, on your own. But
I mean, I was a grieving mom, grieving out loud. Nobody was given a choice, I'm afraid.
What was really interesting was you talked about the millennials, and this kind of gets into the next question I wanted to ask you, because we know that, you know, we talk about cultural change. How do you change a culture and how does it shift? And we know that, you know, certain groups of people can do that, are asking us to do that or think about that. And so, I mean, we talked last time in our pre-interview about, you know, a cultural shift that is necessary, you know, in the workplace and grief area. And so I'm really interested in your kind of vision of what is that? How do you shift the culture? And what is maybe a loss-friendly culture, not just a grief culture, because as you know, there's all kinds of different loss that people are going through. And so how do you create this loss-friendly culture that doesn't exist? And I mean, we've talked about leadership for sure. I know it starts at the top, but what's your vision of that? And what have you been teaching other people in your work?
Yeah. So my vision really is, and you know, this is my, I call it my cathedral project, because it's probably not going to happen in my lifetime, but I'm going to do everything I can to get the blueprints done and lay the foundation and start putting in the bricks. You know, my dream is that we would talk about grief and loss as naturally as we talk about what we binge watched on the weekend, that it just would be a part of our normal conversation. Because as you see, we're all experiencing grief all the time. When we expand our definition to understand that every loss brings grief, we're all experiencing grief in varying degrees all the time. And right now as a collective, after the last, what we've been through together the last few years and what continues to happen in our world, we're in seas of grief. We're just swimming in a sea of it. The first thing we need to do is acknowledge it and name it. You know, I talk to so many organizations that are talking about stress and they're talking about burnout and they're not talking about grief. And I say, okay, well, you know, let's look at your organization and figure out, first of all, where is grief happening at work? Because it's happening at work. There are losses at work, not necessarily a loved one or a patient or a, you know, client, but maybe we've launched a product that didn't go the way we wanted. So what if that first meeting, where we would come together and we've got the whiteboard or the magic board and we're doing our debrief and we're breaking down where it went wrong and we're going to pivot and we're going to rebrand or we're going to do whatever we're going to do. What if that started with the leader? Because as we said, has to come from the leader first. No one else is going to be leading the way of vulnerability. But the leader could say, and we can do this in all kinds of losses in our personal lives too. It's really, really powerful to practice on the losses that are not of a loved one. So what if before you went to cheerleader fix it mode, you said something like, you know, we all worked really hard on this project and it didn't launch the way that we wanted it to. And before we get to how, what are we going to do next? Where did we break down? What could we do have done differently? How do we learn from it? I just want to share as the leader of this project that I have a lot of feelings about that. Mm-hmm. And name a few of them. I'm feeling disappointed. I'm feeling frustrated. I'm feeling sad. And I want you all to know that if you have a bunch of feelings, it's okay to express them here. And if there's anybody who wants to share a feeling, we could do a quick popcorn and do that, or round robin, or name it, or yell it out, or whatever you want. However you want to do that, that suits your workplace culture, because they're all different. Mm-hmm. And then we go to fix it. What do we do next? All of that, right? We can do that with friends and family that maybe lost a job or had applied for something and didn't get it. Like, instead of, you know, we want to go to those same kinds of cliches and platitudes. Oh, you know, there's a better job out there for you. Oh, it's their loss. We want to try and make people feel better. But then that we're encouraging them to deny all the feelings that they have. So what if instead we first said, wow, you know, I know that job was really important to you. And that was a huge part of your social circle. And it's a huge part of how you shaped your day, and it was a part of your identity. And there must be a whole lot of feelings about that. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to share any of those with me, I'm a space where you can do that, where it's okay to do that. And then we can go to, yeah, I'm mad about it too, right? And then we can go to our, you know, proactive, like, let me help you find applications, or, you know, whatever you want to offer, or you just want to be a cheerleader, that's all great. But we're skipping a critical step in allowing those emotions to flow and keep going. And it's making us physically sick. We know that, right? The science is now telling us. all this repressed emotion that we've been so proud of doing for decades is making us sick. So let's find ways that we can talk about it. We can say, yeah, I'm disappointed. I'm sad. I feel a lot of grief. Grief is this great umbrella of this messed up hodgepodge of all the emotions all at once. And if we can name them, we can move them.
Yeah. And you know, we were talking last time too about, you know, the whole onboarding process, you know, coming into a company organization. I mean, I'm assuming that there are not too many, you know, manuals that, you know, have anything about grief besides if you have somebody die, you get 3 days leave.
Yeah, depending on who they are, which we have determined for you how important they are to you. That's a whole other problem.
Maybe, you know, you can go to, you know, get some, go to a psychologist for a few sessions.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it seems to me that, you know, we talked about this earlier, that onboarding process from the very beginning could set the tone of the whole cultural shift. This is what we do here.
Yeah, we do things differently.
Yeah, we care about
on purpose.
Yeah. And we care about being vulnerable. We care about sharing something deep within us. We care about the mind, yes, but the productivity, but we care about us as human beings.
Yeah. You know? And really, you know, if you have a return to work policy for people who get injured and you have accommodations, you have a return to work, you know, graduated reentry, you have shifts in duties, you have all of those kinds of things. That's what we're talking about. We already have these kinds of policies. But we don't have them around grief and loss. We don't have them around other things that kind of fall under that mental health umbrella. And as it becomes more and more important for us to really look at our overall mental health, you know, different from diagnosed mental illness, but our mental health umbrella, we're looking at psychological safety. All of those things are becoming really important in our workplaces.
Yeah.
This kind of a policy, you know, really means that you're not just talking about it. You're actually documenting and putting into place how we will support somebody who's coming back to work or who never got time off work. This is the other thing we forget. You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, you get that 3 days off and then you're supposed to be back like nothing happened. Some people have 0 days off. They have to fight to get a day off to go to the memorial. Because if the relationship isn't the ones in the policy, you don't get anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we have people there who we maybe don't even know what's happening for them. And if they can come and say, I'm experiencing a lot of grief, I'm experiencing a lot of upset, can we look at that policy together? It gives everybody a scaffold to hang their hats on, right? Because the other, like the supervisor has to be able to have this conversation. So we need to give them tools too, because we're all part of this same collective that doesn't understand grief, that doesn't want to talk about it, that doesn't know enough to be able to do it in a way that feels okay. We all feel very uncomfortable and a lot of fear. You know, when I talk to people about why they didn't maybe show up the way they wanted, 99% of the time it's out of fear.
Mm.
And we can combat fear with information, right? We can feel less fear when we know more. And then we need to find ways to practice. So we can practice, what would I say? How would I reach out and support someone? We can practice on those losses that aren't a loved one. So when the loss of a loved one happens, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. For many of us, it's happened a lot in the last few years. We have some skills. We've practiced, right? When we get our driver's license and we have our learner's license, we don't go drive across the country. We try and drive home and then we go to the corner store and then we slowly get better. We slowly take on bigger challenges. We need to do the same thing with everything we learn. We do it for everything. So we can do it here too.
So really, are you saying then that, I don't want to put words into your mouth here, but as you talk, you're inspiring me to think about this. Are we giving people a language to speak grief then? Because if we don't...
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's part of why I think it's so exciting to work in workplaces about this, because workplaces have a shared culture.
Yeah.
They have a shared way of speaking about things. So I can come in and look at how you do that already and add this, fill this gap, because it's just a gap in the workplace that mirrors and reflects the gap that's in our overall culture. It's a micro macro thing. There's no shame. There's no blame. Mm-hmm. We've all co-created this together. So we need to fix it together. And you already have shared language, right? You already have shared ways of speaking to each other. So will those work in this circumstance? Maybe. Do we need to shift them a little bit? Maybe. Do you already have great emotional intelligence in your workplace? A lot of places do. But no matter how good it is, you're probably not talking about grief as openly as you could, because none of us are. So that's okay. We start from there and then go, great. Okay. So you're already having, you know, monthly sessions, or you're offering all this great employee assistance stuff. You have really great workplace health and wellness and all of that stuff. Let's add this piece to it. So we look at, what are you doing already? What's already in your care umbrella? And how do we align this to add it into what you're already doing? Because most places are already doing something.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Health and wellness has been a big part of what we're doing in the workplace for a long time now. So most places are doing something. If you have a policy around this and you are really putting your money where your mouth is, and it's hardly any money, right? The support structures and the things that are really helpful are cost neutral or very low cost, mm-hmm. because you have everything you already need. You just don't know how to use it in this area. We can add that. And then, you know, back to what you were saying about onboarding, this becomes part of your recruiting process. You're able to say to potential talent, you're trying to attract this top talent in this very competitive market right now. You know, you're able to say, you know, we don't just talk about psychological safety. Like, we have gone as far as to create a policy that helps to create psychological safety for people experiencing grief and loss, for all kinds of losses. And we openly talk about that here. That's one of the things we're doing to address our psychological safety and our mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the benefits we're seeing, right? There's all kinds of benefits. Ripple benefits are unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you're standing out. And then as part of the onboarding, you know, you're talking about, oh yeah, here's this policy. Let's talk about, you know, do you need to access that now? How are you doing?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You're excited to have this new job, I hope. And what's happening in the rest of your place? Like, what's happening in the rest of your world? Do we need to look at this now? No, you're good. Great. When, if you ever need it, no, you just come and you say, let's look at that policy together. And it's right there.
Yeah.
It's documented. It's equitable. It levels the playing field when the supervisors have different skill levels. You know, it really deals with so many, many issues. If we can really dig in there, start to create a shared language around it and a shared culture around it, and then have a policy.
This is wonderful. Thank you for being a cathedral builder.
Oh, thank you. Like, we should that, all like have that. A cathedral project.
I like that term is very well. I have one final question. Could you please, if you're willing to, tell us, I know there's many things about your son, Ben, that you love in this. Can you just share one thing with the listeners, what you miss about Ben, you know, as you think about him right now?
It's actually very present for me because I'm planning a trip with my brother to a place that I've gone to with Ben. And one of the things I'm missing intensely about him right now is his curiosity and his encyclopedic knowledge on a massive, wide, varied amount of things. Because I could just go to him with the most random question and he would know, because he just did. And every once in a while I would challenge him and he would just kind of look at me and I'm like, oh yeah, never mind. Like, never mind. If I went to Google it, you'd be right. Never mind. Yes, I'll just do what you say. I am missing that as I'm trying to plan a big trip.
Oh yes, I'm sure you are. Well, Suzanne, this has been amazing. And thank you for being on the podcast. And now, I mean, there are people who are out there listening to the podcast, and there could be business owners, or there could be employees who are going, man, I want to share that with the place where I work. How can they get a hold of you to talk further? And I know you do workshops and training events in this area. So where can they get a hold of you? And I'll put it in the show notes too. But
yeah, perfect. The best place is on my website, which is suzannejabor.com. And you can book into my calendar there if I have upcoming, you know, events. They're always there. And if you love podcasts and you love listening to things, you can go to suzannejabor.com/podcasts, and I will send you a curated list of 10-ish. There's usually about 10 on there. Recent appearances, some where I tell more of my own personal story, some where, like this one, we talk more about, you know, what happens at work and what could we do about it. And that will just help you find more good conversations.
That's great. That's a great idea. That's super. Well, I'm looking forward to your future. I think this is such an important area. As a grief counselor, this question comes up all the time with people I'm working with. You know, the frightening to go back, the fear to go back to work. But, you know, so you've laid out some wonderful ideas here. And for those of you who are listening to the podcast today, please, share this podcast with those around you, neighbors, friends, coworkers, your bosses, whoever might be listening, that this would be helpful for us. So again, Suzanne, thank you so much for being on It's All About the Story.
Thank you so much for having me.
And again, this is Rick Berg. Till next time, It's All About the Story. We'll see you soon. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for joining us today on It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us. We hope this podcast was encouraging to you. There are so many different types of loss. Why not take time to listen to some of the other unique stories in this podcast series? Feel free to share them with family, friends, neighbors. If you'd like to receive notifications about the next episode in the series, please subscribe and we'll make sure you don't miss out. We hope that you'll be joining us again on It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us, with host Rick Berg. Take good care.